This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Apart from being extremely important for its vital role in provisioning water and other ecosystem services, the Greater Ulumoda Forest harbors important wildlife and biodiversity and is a model for ecotourism done right. However, despite the recognition given to the need to conserve this rich area from as far back as 2003, today a large proportion of the forest is not protected and still being logged. It is also facing other threats such as wildlife poaching and illegal mining activities. So today I'll be speaking to three different experts about the vital importance of this area to all Malaysians and the need for improved conservation and management of the Greater Ulumoda Forest. First up is Jaime Kamarudin. He's a conservationist, a natural resources manager and operator of Earth Lodge in Ulumoda. So Jaime first introduced Ulumoda to us back in 2012, and it opened our eyes to this outstanding area for wildlife conservation and nature tourism. Today, he alerts us to the threats the area is facing. Hi, Jaime. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
So, I mean, since we last spoke, you know, just tell me, how are things at Earth Lodge and at the Ulumoda Field Research Centre?
Things are going well with Earth Lodge. You know, we have this self-imposed limit on visitors, so because we feel that, you know, we want to control the number of visitors to Ulumoda, so we're doing all right. Mm-hmm. And as far as the Field Research Centre is concerned, we are doing several projects at the moment. One of the projects I think that would be of interest is to most people is elephant identification. Most people know that, you know, how to identify an elephant. They know an elephant compared to maybe a tiger, but what we're trying to do is to identify individual elephants.
Oh, okay. So each one in their own personality, I suppose, as a personality.
Yeah, characters on, you know, like just like facial recognition.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that. So it's a way of trying to identify elephants individually so that we have some idea of numbers and, you know, whether we are meeting the same individual or the same group or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we're working quite closely with, you know, Nottingham University, MIME on this one. Hopefully it does well. We have volunteers running it,
okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've spoken to you a couple of times before, but for anyone who's not familiar, can you just remind us, you know, about the Ulumoda area and, you know, why it's so significant?
Yeah, well, the area is significant because of its, the main reason is because of its importance for water catchment. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason. It's got high biodiversity, very good large mammal population over there. There's a lot of salt lakes around the area. Altogether in the Greater Ulumoda area, we have about nearly 30 salt lakes scattered all around, just around the Earth Lodge area, which is Kuala Labuah, in the Ulumoda area. We've got about nearly 9 salt lakes in a 5-kilometer radius. So it's just a large concentration of wildlife, especially herbivores. You have herbivores, you have carnivores too. So, yeah, there's a large concentration of wildlife around the area. So it's very, very important. But coming back to water catchment, that is the main reason why these lakes, the three lakes in the Greater Ulumoda was created. Mm-hmm. In 1970 and 1980. They were commissioned in those years, yeah? Mm-hmm. So we've got three lakes there. They were built for irrigation. So when you build a man-made dam, basically, yeah, a lake, yep, for irrigation, you need to ensure that water supply is there. You cannot be going around trying to disturb the water catchment area, which is the forest, basically, and hoping that there will be still water coming in into your lakes from the forest. So you have to take care of the water catchment. It's very, very, very important. And the other reason is that these lakes were built to provide water for irrigation to the paddy fields out in the Kedah and southern Perlis Plains. And this is a very, very, very important paddy growing area for Malaysia, for our country, for our nation. And it's crucial that the water supply from these forests continue. And if it does not, then it affects our food supply, which affects everybody in this country. Close to 50% of, you know, depending on who you talk to, close to 50% of our paddy supply comes from this area. So it's very, very important to make sure that this place is protected properly.
We've heard, I mean, we've been reading the recent news reports. The area is obviously not fully protected. I mean, it's not a national park, for example. It's not a state park, right? So what happens then when it doesn't actually have this kind of status?
When it doesn't have this kind of status, then depending who is running the government of the day in the state. They can make up their minds to do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. When it's properly protected, then the reason why it's being protected is clearly stated. So people, the administrators, yeah, cannot simply come in to do whatever they like, whenever they like. Mm-hmm. Once it's already fully stated, it's made known to the public, it's made known to everybody that this is water catchment forest, and it is for water catchment, period. And a protected area has to be protected properly and very securely. And what we mean by this is that it cannot and must not be degazetted easily. So once it's protected for, well, a long time. And, you know, it must be difficult to be degazetted later on.
Mm-hmm.
It means it cannot be, the status for that area cannot be changed. Or if it needs to be changed, it has to go through a very, very long, difficult, tedious process. Then if that's in place for an area like Ulu Muda, then it is well protected.
So as it stands, I mean, how much has the area changed? You know, what sort of threats is the Greater Ulu Muda for area facing at the moment?
Well, it's facing a lot of small threats. But I think the biggest one at the moment is definitely logging. The logging is done legally, so there's no argument about that. Yeah, it's not illegal, it's legal.
Right.
The state needs money, so they log. But I think many people disagree with that decision because it's a short-term benefit decision, you see.
Yep.
They have to think a bit longer. Like I said, the area is a nationally important area, so the state has to consider that and not log the area at all. Right now, it is logging, it's expanding, it's going to areas where was never previously logged before. What I mean is they are going eventually to areas which are primary forests. And these are the last primary forests that's available, lowland primary forests, okay,
mm-hmm.
that's still available in Kedah because the rest is all gone. So, you know, there's many, many reasons why the logging must be halted. And the most important reason is that it's a very, very important catchment area and it has to be stopped.
So what is the long-term effect, you know, if even this legal logging is still allowed?
Well, long-term effect would be a decline in water quality and decline in water supply. The more you open up forests, the more you build roads, the more the rivers get silted. What will happen is that there will be less and less water available to feed into the lakes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there will be less water feeding into the lakes. When you have less water feeding lakes, then you know you have less water for irrigation, and paddy will be affected definitely. So that is the most important. The opening of logging roads in the long term will definitely affect the wildlife and nature, basically, because that will allow people to enter forests, yeah, for poaching, illegal collection of forest products, that kind of stuff, which is not good for biodiversity. So that will be a long term effect.
So is it possible, I suppose, to come to a middle ground? You know, obviously there are many stakeholders involved here. There's the federal government, there's the state government, you know, there's the NGOs, you guys, you know. How do we even start to find a middle ground to keep the area protected?
Yeah, I think first of all, we all have to realize that the Kedah state government does need money.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we cannot allow the forest to be exploited for state income. That's just not possible. Land is a state matter, so they have the right to do whatever they want. But what we have to do, we have to try to advise the state to not do it and provide some sort of compensation so that the state does not have to log to get that income that they need. And instead, it's provided by other ways. I think one way that is mentioned is PES, which is Payment for Ecosystem Services.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Which is where federal and state governments and users of water actually contribute to the protection of ecosystem services provided by forests. So this money should actually go back to the Kedah state government because they rightly should be compensated for putting aside large tracts of forest like this for national interest, for national use, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just for them. This is for the whole country. The paddy, the water that goes to the paddy field, and the paddy that is produced is not just for Kedah state government, but it's for the whole country. So they should rightly be compensated for putting aside forests for all of our good, basically.
And Ulumuda is also I would say it's a hotspot for ecotourism. I mean, you run the Earth Lodge. Yes. And I understand that the National Ecotourism Plan 2016 actually identified Ulumuda as a priority ecotourism cluster. What does that mean exactly?
That means that they have identified Ulumuda as an important area for ecotourism. I think they realize that, you know, it's got a lot of potential. Ecotourism can be promoted in Ulumuda. Mm-hmm. My view is that I agree with that, but I think Ulumuda must not be promoted where development and promotion of tourism is forced upon it. It has to be promoted organically. I mean, it grows slowly so that local people will benefit, the forest will be able to absorb the numbers of people going in, and it's not pushed, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, understand.
Some places in Malaysia and around the world, actually, when a place is identified suitable for tourism, and then, you know, all kind of development comes in, and then it becomes white elephants, the infrastructure is too advanced for the stage of tourism development, so it just doesn't gel. So I hope that the federal government, who's identified Ulumuda as a potential ecotourism cluster, will take all that into consideration.
So, looking at the threats that Ulumuda, the greater Ulumuda area, is facing now, you know, the logging, which is legal, as you said, but there's that, and then comes the poaching from, you know, people having more access into the... What are your recommendations? I mean, I understand there's the Friends of Ulumuda, you guys have gotten together, and you've come up with some recommendations. Could you, you know, elaborate on that for me?
Well, for my personal view is that I think logging must stop. I think there's no two ways about it. Logging must stop. Mm-hmm. And I think federal government must start talking to state government and put Ulumuda up there as a priority. Mm-hmm. Which means that some kind of compensation has to go back to the state government. And, you know, we can't just tell state government to just stop and then without giving something back.
Exactly.
Many years ago, I think the federal government did promise to give some kind of compensation, but they did not. Why that happened, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think it has to be looked at again, re-looked at. And I think it has to be done immediately. If the PES mechanism cannot be established straight away, possibly federal government should compensate the state government for the short term before some kind of PES mechanism is put into place so that Kedah state government can continue getting some kind of compensation for putting forests aside. And once that's done, I think one of the most important thing is proper management. A lot of protected areas in Malaysia and around the world are just paper, are just protected areas on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be properly managed with the right people, with the right qualification, and the right budget, definitely. So it has to be properly protected and properly managed. You can't just have one without the other.
And I understand you guys have an online petition going on. Can you tell me about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We like listeners out there to show their support. And like I said, this is not for people of Kedah, Penang and Perlis only, or people just for people around Ulumuda. No, this will affect us from Perlis all the way down to Johor, all the way across the South China Sea to Sabah and to Sarawak. So everybody should go to change.org and look for Ulumuda, mm-hmm, and sign the petition that we've put there. We want to send this petition to the state and to the federal government and to tell them that Malaysians are concerned about this and something has to be done straight away, immediately. And the other thing that the public can do is they can speak out, they can write letters, they can talk to their representatives, they can talk to their friends, their neighbors, everybody. Just talk about this. They have to bring it up. They have to show everybody concerned that they are concerned. And once this thing picks up, the momentum has been picked up, then I think people will start listening. And the trouble with Ulumuda is that it's suffering from a case of it's not being very known, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell people about Ulumuda, there's a forest in Kedah called Ulumuda, nobody really realizes it's a forest.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends will go say, "What? Kedah got forest, meh?" You know, so I keep telling them, yes, it's a very important forest. So, yeah, people must know more about Ulumuda. On the other hand, we have... On the tourism side, on the visitation side, we must not over-promote Ulumuda for tourism. But we must make Ulumuda known to people so that they are concerned about what's happening over there.
And I think, you know, you touched on the very important aspects of, you know, water security. You know, people here in Klang Valley, we remember the water shortage we had a few years ago and how devastating that was for us. And, you know, these... Yep. I guess, you know, we need to make that connection that when you start doing things with the water catchment areas, you are ultimately going to be affected.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. And in this case, you're not only going to be affected by your drinking water, but people in Selangor might say, oh, it doesn't affect me, but then it affect your rice bowl.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you won't have food on your table, man. And we and have to, you know, start importing rice, more rice from Thailand, maybe Indonesia, Philippines or whatever, which we shouldn't be. We should be self-sufficient. Or close to. Well, I think the important point is that people have to sign up at the petition at change.org. And I think that's important. I think people should start reading up. There's a lot of materials now, especially over the last few years, has been coming out on Ulu Muda. I hope people do Google all these things and start reading up and, you know, understand why it's important. I hope decision makers in governments especially will start reading up on this material and, you know, have an open mind and have a look at this. And we are not doing this because we want to fight. Because I never like to say that we are fighting this. No, we are not fighting this. We're trying to get a place protected, period. We're not fighting anybody. And the protection of this area is important for everybody, for all Malaysians.
That was Haimir Kamarudin, a conservationist, natural resources manager and operator of Earth Lodge in Ulu Muda. Coming up after this break, we will hear from Professor Chan Ngai Weng. He is the president of Water Watch Penang. You are listening to an Ulu Muda special on Earth Matters, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We are focusing on Ulu Muda today, a paradise in peril. This natural wonder in our own land is facing threats such as logging and poaching. And earlier, we heard from Haimir Kamarudin, who mentioned the importance of the water catchment areas in the Greater Ulu Muda area. So the Greater Ulu Muda Forest is the water catchment for three man-made dams and forms the headwaters for the Muda and Kedah rivers. So waters from the Greater Ulu Muda Forest is supplied to the Northern Peninsula Malaysia states of Kedah, Penang and Perlis. So we're going to zone in on this now with Professor Chan Ngai Weng. He is the president of Water Watch Penang. So Professor Chan, maybe you could start off with you telling me a bit about the work you do as the president of Water Watch Penang and, you know, what Water Watch Penang is all about.
Oh, okay. Water Watch Penang is actually the only water NGO in the whole country. That's because we only deal with water and water issues and nothing else. Compared to other NGOs, they have, you know, biodiversity, water, climate change and all those things, but we are only dealing with water. So Water Watch Penang, actually, we started in 1997 by a group of concerned citizens, Penangites, and we formed the Pro Tem Committee and, in 1997, and we got registered with the ROS in 1998. So we are about 20 years now, and our main aim is to educate people about the importance of water. Mostly we do education and awareness raising campaigns in the schools, the public and so on. And we are also the watchdog for water tariffs and water pollution and anything that goes with water. Although we are mostly based in Penang, we are also doing work in other states like Selangor and KL. And we are actually in touch with the Ministry of Water Resources and other NGOs doing work on water.
So you do a lot of outreach programs, Professor Yu, as you were saying. Do you think people actually, you know how we just get our water? Water is such an easy thing for us to get. We switch on our taps, we get it. You know, do you think, you know, in all the work that you do, do you think people actually understand, you know, how the process of how that water actually gets to them?
Well, if you're talking about 20, 30 years ago, maybe they are not aware. But in this era of, you know, mostly everybody has good education. And I would say, our youngsters going to the university is mostly maybe about 90% over. So I can't say that, you know, we are not educated enough. We have done a lot of work on awareness raising. I think the awareness is there. It's just the commitment is not there. And the main reason why is because people don't pay attention to water. It's because the tariff is too low. So nobody will pay attention to saving water when you're only paying a 3 ringgit a month. Compared to your petrol or other things, you know. But we're trying very hard, you know, to get the message across. People actually understand the importance of water, but they are not committed.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm speaking to you today, actually, about, you know, what's happening in the Greater Ulu Muda Forest. So how important, actually, is the Greater Ulu Muda Forest, especially in terms of the water that it supplies?
Ulu Muda Forest actually serves the whole northern region of Peninsula Malaysia. Mm-hmm. It is the main forest reserve, water catchment for this particular region, supplying water to mostly Kedah and Penang, but also to Perlis. So if you are looking at water supply, not just for domestic, but also for agriculture and industry, I think it is very, very important. It is the main water supply catchment, and if anything goes wrong with this water catchment, then all three states will suffer. Okay?
Okay.
So that's how important it is.
And how much of that supply is actually contained in the forest reserve? I mean, specifically to serve the local communities.
Okay. For Penang, we are drawing about 80% of our water from the Sungai Muda, mm-hmm. About more than 1 billion liters per day, you know, daily. 1 billion liters per day. And in the Kedah area, there are also 14 water treatment plants. And these 14 treatment plants also take water from the Sungai Muda. So in total, Penang and Kedah, two states, abstract about 1.56 billion liters from the Sungai Muda daily. This is just for water supply. I have not taken into consideration the water that's used for irrigation and for other things. So without this raw water, I think local communities will suffer, industry will suffer, everything else will suffer. We would be like living in a country like perhaps India or Africa. So that is how important it is.
So should the clean water supply at Ulu Muda become insufficient, you know, do we have any alternative water supplies, you know, to these current dependent areas?
For Perlis and Kedah, I think there's very little alternative, but at least for Penang, we are looking into maybe getting alternative water, raw water supply from Perak, mm-hmm. because we are bordering Perak and there are some big rivers in Perak, but it has not materialized yet. We can also look at desalination, which is Penang, you know, is surrounded by seas, yes. But it is going to be very expensive to do desalination. And of course, we do never go to the extreme like what our neighbor Singapore is doing, which is using recycled water. Of course, we can use rainwater harvesting, you know, and many other things. But Water Wash Penang, we are very committed towards getting people to reduce their water demand. So water demand management is an alternative. By reducing our demand, we do not stress the system so much, so that whatever water resources that is available, we can use in the future. Mm-hmm. So groundwater is also another alternative, but I should think groundwater, we should save it for the future generation, because there are many, many issues related to groundwater. If you take out the groundwater, maybe the ground will sink, there will be many, many problems.
So just going back to Ulu Muda, I mean, how much of that freshwater supply that, you know, is, as you said, you know, 1.6 billion litres daily, right, going to Penang alone, how much of it is actually protected from runoff and contaminants from logging? Because we know that now logging is an issue there as well.
There are a few studies on this in the Ulu Muda area, but my guess is that based on studies conducted elsewhere, mm-hmm. The current logging practices have very little protection against runoff contaminants. Mm-hmm. Of course, when they apply for the license, you know, there will be mitigation, like, you know, you have a retention pond, sedimentation pond, and so on, mm-hmm. to stop the water sediments from flowing to the river. But actually, because of poor enforcement and monitoring, none of these practices actually are fully implemented, and resulting in a lot of contaminants and sediments getting into the river. And this is mostly due to poor enforcement and irresponsible logging.
So, I mean, what is the consequence of this? You know, I mean, for someone who doesn't understand, why is soil runoff a major issue, especially in these water catchment areas?
Okay, the first thing is if you destroy a catchment, mm-hmm. a catchment is not able to retain and capture the water, the rainwater anymore, so you lose the water catchment. You lose the water supply, the first thing. The second thing is when you lock an area, you expose the land, and due to soil erosion, rain splash erosion, and running off, all this will get into your river system. Your river will get polluted. So if you get a lot of water in the water in the river, you get your Teh Tarik River, and mm-hmm. it is useless because it's going to clog up your treatment plant. So many treatment plants actually in the past, and Selangor and so on, have been forced to stop for a week or so because of heavy sediments. The other thing is, when these sediments get into the river, the river's capacity to drain the water, excessive water, is much reduced, which means the drainage capacity, which is a function of reducing flood, is much reduced. So your river bed is very shallow. Mm. With the shallowing of a river, reduces drainage capacity, and in other words, will cause flooding downstream. Not upstream, but further downstream.
Right.
So flooding is a very serious issue in the Sungai Muda. That's why the Drainage Irrigation Department has a big flood mitigation scheme along the Sungai Muda. There may be other effects on the wildlife, on the flora and the fauna. And of course, without trees, definitely global warming will be much more higher. The trees is and the forest actually absorb a lot of carbon dioxide, and they are a carbon sink. So it will reduce global warming. Without trees, the cooling effect is not there. So we will get hotter, and it will also enhance global warming.
You know, let's say, like you were saying, you know, the water becomes polluted, you know, becomes our teh tarik water and all that, right? What is involved actually in treating this water to become safe to use again?
Conventional water treatment plants will be able to treat this water, because these sediments are actually only soil and so on and mud. Mm-hmm. But if it is very heavily polluted, mm-hmm. meaning to say that maybe about more than 50% of the volume of water is actually mud, so it will clog up your treatment plant. So this is a no-no. And it's going to be having a lot of problem on the treatment plant. So I think eventually, if we don't clean up our river, the treatment plants are going to have a lot of problems.
Just to paint it out for somebody who's listening, you know, how does all of this then, you know, affect our local economy? And, you know, I think our rice farmers also, I mean, you mentioned Penang Kedah, they are very, very dependent on this. And a lot of our rice farmers come from these areas. How does all of this affect us and affect them?
Yes, of course, like you say, the first thing is, without water from the River Muda, mm-hmm. There's no irrigation, insufficient irrigation. So our paddy will suffer. Mm-hmm. So their crops cannot be grown without water.
Yep.
I don't think there's any crop, you know, let alone paddy and so on, which needs a lot of water, mm-hmm. Can be grown without water. So without water from the Sungai Muda, the Muda area will suffer. So, you know, the Muda area is one of the big granary areas for Malaysia. Already we have to import a lot of rice from Thailand and Vietnam. If this suffers, the Muda areas, you know, get destroyed, there's no more paddy coming from there. Mm-hmm. Our food supply will be shortened, you know. There's mm-hmm. not enough food. The other industry that's going to suffer is actually for, you know, in Kedah, we have the Kulim High Tech Park. In Penang, we have our free trade zone. And all these big, big factories, they need a lot of water. Right. Without water, the factories will stop. You know, there's one or two factories, big factories in Penang. If they stop for one day, they are going to lose millions of ringgit. So you can imagine how important water is, water supply, uninterrupted water supply is to this industry. Then again, of course, tourism is a big thing. In Penang, if you have a hotel without water, nobody's going to come. So can you imagine hotels having problem with water in Penang, Kedah, Langkawi, you know, and so on? Mm. So this is going to affect the tourism industry as well. There are many, many other things that will be affected due to shortage of water, because everything else needs water to produce.
So, I mean, then the question begs to be asked, you know, why is logging, you know, even permitted at such a crucial water catchment area?
Juliet, this question I cannot answer. I don't have the answer for it.
Yeah.
Because my guess is that because logging is the quickest way to get profits. You don't need to, you know, invest a lot of money to build big plants like industry and so on before you can get, you know, your revenue. All you need to do is just issue the logging license and then you have your money coming in, you know. So this is very easy money. But then again, perhaps those who are issuing license are not aware of the you know, the consequences of destroying the Muda catchment. They may think that, oh, we in the Muda catchment is a huge area, we can log one small area, it's not going to have a problem. But, you know, if you add all these logging areas together, it's going to be a huge problem. And once the Muda catchment is destroyed, it takes many, many years, maybe 100, 200 years for it to recover. So we have to treat it very, very carefully.
So speaking of that protection, you know, what actually can be done to protect the area's water supply? I mean, are there opportunities I suppose now within the institutional framework, you know, to promote mechanisms for, you know, all the relevant stakeholders to contribute towards the protection and conservation, especially of the Muda catchment area?
Well, at the moment, the Ulu Muda Forest, mostly it is gazetted as a protected forest, and part of it actually productive forest. Productive forests can be logged, whereas protected ones are not supposed to be logged. But because the law is such, you can de-gazette the protected forest to be productive forest. So that means it is not totally protected. So our suggestion is from Water Watch Penang, if you gazette the forest as a water catchment, then it becomes a law. So you cannot log in the water catchment. There will not be any more logging or any other development and can jeopardize the water catchment. So water catchment gazettement is one thing. The other thing is, you know, we can gazette not the whole area, part of the area as a national park or a state park. So that also cannot be touched anymore, or as a, you know, wildlife sanctuary and so on. So these things need to be looked in perspective, and of course has to come from the government, maybe with the help and inputs from stakeholders like NGOs. So gazettement of water catchment, wildlife sanctuary, national park and state park will be the first thing that needs to be done. Our proposal is that we should not totally, you know, gazette the whole area. We can chop up the area into many parts. For instance, section 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Section 1 and 2 may be, you know, wildlife sanctuary, water catchment. Section 3 can be productive forest, you know, those areas very far away from the river. Furthest away from the river can be used as a logging, for productive logging, which is subject to environmental, you know, protection as well. There are many, you know, things that you need to do to have this sustainable logging. And then Section 4 and 5 can be used for research, for recreation, tourism, and so on. So, you know, if Kedah can do this sort of section sort of thing, dividing into section, then it would be good. Then they can also get some income. And at the moment, they are not doing this.
How can the public, somebody like me, for example, here in KL, what can we do to kind of help in this area?
For the public, I think you should raise your voice, you know, support campaigns like the one now to protect the catchment. Because ultimately, if the catchment gets destroyed, you will get affected as well, because you don't get water running in your tap. You don't get food, you don't get products from industry and so on. So eventually, the common people will get affected. So support the NGOs, support the campaigns, and raise your voice. Write to the, you know, editors of the newspapers and highlight the issues. Mm-hmm. Support the campaign. I think that's all you can do. If there is any contribution towards campaign funds for the Friends of Ulu Muda, then perhaps the public can, you know, put some donation and so on.
That was Professor Chan Ngai Weng. He is the president of Water Watch Penang, and he painted a very clear picture of the impact to all of us if the water supply from Ulu Muda were to be disrupted in any way. We take a quick break, but when we return, Dr. Wong Yi Pin, an elephant researcher, joins us to focus on the fauna found in Ulu Muda, specifically the elephants. You are listening to an Ulu Muda special on Earth Matters. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. It's our Ulu Muda special on the show today, and so far we've heard from Haimir Kamarudin and Professor Chan Ngai Weng. Now we're going to hear from Dr. Wong Yi Pin, an elephant researcher with the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants, or MEEM as it's known, about the significance of Ulu Muda to the fauna found there. So the Greater Ulu Muda Forest harbours important biodiversity and is home to many rare and threatened wildlife species, including the Malaysian tapir, the Malayan sun bear, siro, and over 300 species of birds. It's also one of the only two areas in Malaysia where all 10 species of Malaysian hornbills are found, including the rare and endangered plain-pouched hornbill. So we hear now from Dr. Wong Yi Pin, who fills us in on the wildlife species found there and the importance of conserving them.
Even maybe you could start off by telling me about the work that you do.
I'm with the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants. MEEM is a research organization. I'm based in the University of Nottingham. I just finished my PhD, which is regarding looking at hormones in elephant dung. So basically, it's a non-invasive method. That means I don't have to catch the animal in order to measure the hormone. Mm-hmm. Instead, from the dung, process the dung in the lab, I can extract out the hormone metabolites. And this hormone that I'm looking at is called glucocorticoid. It's something to do with our response towards our surroundings. So basically, for my research, I focus on using this method to see how we can apply it in Malaysia, in a tropical country. Because in Malaysia, our rainforest is very green, full of foliage. It's very difficult for us to see elephants, even though they are big animals. But when you walk in the forest, it's actually very difficult for you to observe elephants because they can be very quiet and they can hide very well. Hence, this non-invasive method, we can actually look at wildlife in a more like a cryptic environment.
We are talking about Ulu Muda today. And have you actually been to Ulu Muda? I understand there's an elephant population there as well.
Yes, I have personally have not been to Ulu Muda, but my team, they have done some work over there. We are in collaboration with Wild Crew, Dr. Cedric Dunn. And he did a range of camel trapping work in Ulu Muda. And I have my colleague, Ning. She has been to Earth Lodge to give a training on how to identify elephants based on, you know, their ear characteristics, their tusks, their body features. So learning how to ID elephants, basically. But Ulu Muda is a very special place because it's one of the area in Malaysia with the most number of salt lakes. There is over 30 salt lakes known, recorded in Ulu Muda. This is the Greater Ulu Muda, yeah? Not just the Ulu Muda Forest Reserve, but the Greater Ulu Muda. So in this area, there's over 30 salt lakes that they have recorded. So salt lakes are very important to elephants.
And why is that?
Because elephants, they are herbivore and they eat a diverse range of plants. And all these plants, they contain toxins. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's their natural defense against being eaten by herbivores. They excrete some toxin. So the problem with when you consume too much of these plants, you need a way to neutralize the toxin. And salt lakes is one of the solutions. And in addition, when you are herbivore, you don't get enough nutrient intake. For example, plants, they don't contain very high sodium or salt. Yeah, so the animals, they will need to find the supplement of sodium through salt lakes. So there's two types of salt lakes. There's one that is called hot spring, like mineral spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is like a thermal spring. It's warm because it has heat from the ground. And in this water, it's very high in minerals, like sulfur, calcium, magnesium, yeah. And also, there's a second type of salt lake. It's known as a dry land salt lake. So this is a form, basically they speculate it could be, previously there is a thermal spring there, but then it became a ground area. So the nutrients are concentrated in that area. Yeah. So my friend has done some study comparing the nutrient found in salt lakes and other parts of the forest, and they find that it is true that salt lakes, they have higher concentration of sodium than salt. Yeah.
Okay. So as you said, you know, because elephants are herbivores, so I mean, this is quite a vital thing to their diet, I suppose, and to their well-being.
Yes. Yes. Especially for forests that is far away from the sea.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for forests nearby to the sea, they are still able to get their salt need from the plants because the plants absorb the salt spray. But then for forests that is away, far away from the sea, elephants, they would need to look for salt lakes. Yeah.
Okay. So just looking at the Greater Ulu Muda, I mean, we know that it's under threat again. There have been reports of illegal logging. There have been reports of poaching. How is the elephant population doing there? I mean, would you be able to give us a report about that?
Well, we have not assessed the population in terms of numbers because it's very difficult to count elephants in the forest. But part of the National Elephant Conservation Action Plan, the NECAP, we call it for short, they recognize Ulu Muda and Kedah as part of the elephant managed range. And from Dr. Cedric's study, from the camera trap studies, we found that, you know, we have There seems to be a very thriving population of elephants that we have. We see photos of baby elephants, we see healthy elephants in that area. And I think based on observations by tourists, Jaime from Earth Lodge, they often see elephants nearby.
Wow, how amazing is that?
Yes, yes. It's really very difficult for us to see elephants in the forest. Throughout my studies, I would say I'll be lucky if I track an elephant like 20 times, I get to see maybe once or twice. Yes. So I end up looking more at the dung than the animal.
I was just about to say.
Yeah. So I would say Ulu Muda is very special in the sense that with that high quantity of salt lakes in that area, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of grassy lands beside the river and around the salt lakes. So these habitats, they are ideal for elephants. Yeah. But unfortunately, these habitats, they are not protected. Yeah, they tend to, because the forest reserve, they usually focus on the timber trees. So areas like this beside the river are considered kind of like not important. But for wildlife, for the elephants, these areas are actually very important as well. When the elephants uses the salt lakes, they open up the trails from the forest to the salt lakes. So there's like a network of highway. And this also will facilitate other wildlife to come to the salt lakes as well. So yeah, I would say Ulu Muda is a very special landscape, and I myself personally would like to have more time to do more research in Ulu Muda. Yeah, as for now, there's not much research has been done up there in the north, but we know this area is very important for elephants.
And not just elephants, right? As you mentioned, there's other thriving populations there of other fauna. I mean, could you tell us a bit more about the other fauna that's found in the Ulu Muda, the Greater Ulu Muda Forests?
Yes. Well, WWF have done a lot of studies in Ulu Muda. Mm-hmm. And recently, Oxford Wild Crew also carried out their camera trap work over there. So from their records, they found a lot of interesting observations. One of it is the spotted leopard. So leopards in Peninsular Malaysia, they are melanistic in by nature. That means they are dark color. Mm-hmm. So you actually call them panther because they look like the night. They are jet black. Yeah. But they still have their spots on it. It's very difficult to see them. But there's only two places in Peninsular Malaysia where you can where we've had sightings of spotted leopard. One of it is in Ulu Muda and another one is in Johor. So this is very interesting phenomena for us because like why do certain characteristics is more prevalent in certain parts of the country and not in other parts? So for a biologist, that is a very interesting question for us to look at. And in addition, Ulu Muda is also home to the plain pouch hornbills, the migratory hornbills. They flock by thousands. Mm. So these hornbills, they fly from Thailand and then they will visit Belum Temenggor and they will visit Ulu Muda. So Malaysian Nature Society, they are doing a lot of work on hornbills and in looking at this population. So they identified these areas, this forest, Ulu Muda and Belum Temenggor, as important areas for the plain pouch hornbills. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we lose either one of this area, it could be that we will see the population, we will lose this population of hornbills. Yeah. Yeah. Because they need a lot of food, they migrate around, they need a lot of food to sustain themselves, and it's a huge flock of birds, thousands of birds. So we need a good forest to be able to support this population.
And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's reports of logging, you know, and poaching and things like that. How does that, you know, come to affect the, I mean, let's take the elephants, for example, you know, how do these intrusions like start to affect their well-being?
Yeah, when you open up roads in the forest, it's easier for people to go into the forest and get out. So it is proven in other places, studies done by James Cook University. When you open up a road across a tract of forest, what happens is you will have more poaching. Because it's easier access for people to get in. It's easier for them to put snares or to bring their guns. Then you will have an enforcement problem here. Because it's very hard to control once you open up a road cutting into the forest.
So in essence, you know, when you give the logging operators licenses, you're giving basically all these other people also an unwanted license of access into the forest and, you know, easy access to all these animals.
Yes. And in Ulumuda, the problem is also they are very close to the boundary. So in essence, enforcement there is very difficult. And when you have easy access like this, it makes it makes it harder for the authorities to actually have a place where they can control the people coming in and out of the forest.
Right.
Yeah. And I think this is proven in other parts of Malaysia. When you have a road cutting across a landscape of forest, people can just stop their car anywhere, get out, you know, put snares, and then come back and collect the snares later. And it's really an enforcement nightmare, I would say, when you have roads cutting into forests like that.
You know, last year, the Prime Minister, he launched a revised national policy on biological diversity. I mean, I think things there were, you know, it was all about improving our biodiversity management. I mean, how does all of that play into, you know, what's happening to Ulumuda? You know, it not being a fully protected area, you know, logging licenses still being given out. How would all of this kind of tie in together?
I would say the wildlife will be under threat, actually, because Ulumuda is under is not under the wildlife department protection, because it's not a state park. That means there's no body looking over the governance of that area.
Right.
Even though we have strong laws to protect wildlife, but I would say it is very difficult to protect wildlife in Ulumuda. Right now, Ulumuda is being known more for the importance of it as a water catchment area.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Yeah, because it's supplying water to Kedah, Penang, Perlis. So in essence, they are protecting the Ulumuda as a water catchment area. But for wildlife, I would say we have cases of poaching. There's one case of elephant being poached near Purdue Lake not long ago, last year. You can see from the picture, they actually used a chainsaw to cut out the tusks from the elephant.
Oh my goodness.
So, yes, and that is our concern. When you have more access, like without control, with no proper management of enforcement, and we can see an increase of poaching. And what we are worried about is you have problems like empty forest syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The forest had been hunted out of their wildlife and is empty. It would be very sad if that would happen to Ulumuda, but it could happen.
What would your recommendation be? I mean, should it be, you know, made into a national park or a state park and given full protection?
I think your question, although it sounds very simple, but it's actually very intricate, very complicated, as in the sense that it involves a lot of layers.
Yeah.
It involves the federal government and the state government. It involves like how best we can conserve our biodiversity as heritage for the country, so that our children, you know, great-grandchildren can see it. But at the same time, how do we help to support the state government in the sense that they can get certain revenue by conserving this area? So that's the problem when you want to have development at the same time want to protect the biodiversity. Then there needs to be a balance, and it's become increasing well-known issue is regarding the differences between the state jurisdiction and the federal jurisdiction. So protecting wildlife falls under the federal, but protecting the forest and the land falls under the state. So we need to have a mechanism whereby the federal can channel funds to support the conservation of state parks or protected areas. Yeah, but there's also a need for support from the public for this to happen. The public needs to say, yes, we want to conserve wildlife. Yes, we want to save elephants. We want to save the panthers and the hornbills. So there need to be a lot of willingness for the public to campaign, to say to their elected assemblymen that we want to conserve this forest. And then with the support from the public, only then we can see maybe greater allocation to be given towards protection of forests. Yeah, I think it's a very intricate problem. It's not a direct solution, I would say.
So it involves multi-stakeholders. It's going to be like, you know, a lot of negotiation. It's a long drawn out process. But I guess for us, for me, someone in Kuala Lumpur, for example, the first thing I should do is actually to, I suppose, sign the petition that you guys have going and to say that, you know, these areas should be protected.
Yes, that would be a good start. We are trying to get support from the public to support the protection of Ulu Muda. Mm-hmm. So that is one step you can take. Another step is to actually help us to promote Ulu Muda. It's quite less well-known compared to Taman Negara or Belum Temenggor or Endau Rompin. Mm-hmm. But Ulu Muda actually has been proposed to be a protected area in long time ago, in the 1980s, in the Third Malaysia Plan. Mm-hmm. It was proposed that Ulu Muda to be gazetted as a park, but unfortunately that did not work out until now. And in terms of Malaysian commitment towards the Aichi targets, we're supposed to commit to protect 17% of our terrestrial and inland water by 2020. And then recently we have an updated plan for biodiversity. And in there, we have committed to protect at least 20% of terrestrial areas and inland waters, by 2025. Yeah, so definitely by protecting Ulu Muda, it'll be one step closer to fulfilling all these targets. And I would say it's actually the ideal step, I would say, the next step.
I understand that, you know, there have been some even new discoveries of other wildlife in the area. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
The IUCN specialists, the otter specialists, they have recognized that we have a species called the hairy-nosed otter in Ulu Muda. So this otter is very rare. It's at one point of time is considered extinct, but now we are finding like pockets of population remaining across Southeast Asia. It's endemic to Southeast Asia. So this is considered one of the rarest otter in the world. Yeah. So we should be very proud that we have this population in Ulu Muda.
So what I'm getting from all of this is that, you know, if we go and encroach in that area for, you know, whatever purposes, industrial and logging and such, you know, we are putting so much in danger, so many things that we haven't even found out about yet.
Yes, yes. Well, what we have known is still very little. I'm sure if we do more research, more expeditions, we'll encounter more new things in Ulu Muda. It is actually quite a unique landscape. It's the meeting between of the Thailand continent and then the peninsula of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So geographically, it's the narrowest part of the peninsula. It's the neck of the peninsula of Malaysia. So in this sense, we it's very unique in sense that there's two ecosystem meeting at that point. Hence, we see phenomena like the spotted leopard instead of the black leopard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's a lot more things that we still do not know about Ulu Muda. They have over 30 mineral lakes. Yeah, so if I'm going to do my work on elephants and there's 30 over lakes and it's like, oh, I'm just at the tip of the iceberg. There's still a lot more for me to do. Yeah, so I do hope that we get to protect this area and so that our future generations can enjoy the beauty and nature in Ulu Muda. And I look forward to see what else we can discover from Ulu Muda.
That was Dr. Wong Yi Pin, an elephant researcher with the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants, or MEEM.
So there you have it, folks. You've heard from all three of our guests today. Do get involved in whatever way you can. The easiest thing to do would be to sign the petition at change.org, which will then be handed over to the Kedah State Government and the Federal Government of Malaysia. You can also engage with your local MPs or representatives and make your concerns heard. If you missed any part of this interview, do download the podcast at bfm.my/earth, or you can download it from our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. We'll also add the links to the petition there. Thank you for listening. This has been our Ulu Muda special on Earth Matters, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.